In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Yes, yes, yes.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Let's talk movies. Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10 and the Bangor Drive-In. Alan Adams from The Main Edge joining us over the telephone line. Hello there, Alan.
Well, hello there. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How about yourself?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good.
Yeah.
Playing.
What you been doing? How'd your weekend go?
It was pretty good, actually. I recently had a birthday.
That's right. Yeah. 29, 30. I can never recall.
I'm 27 years old. one of the gifts that my lovely wife gave me, because it's something that I had expressed a little bit of interest in, she got me a set of pickleball paddles.
Oh, pickleball's awesome. I love that.
And I'd never played before, but the idea of it certainly fascinated me. And it turns out, not so long ago, the city of Bangor converted a space at a nearby playground to pickleball courts.
Right, not far from your house.
Yeah, it's down by the Catholic Church. We went on Saturday and engaged in our first pickleballing. And it was super fun.
Oh yeah,
I was pleasantly surprised. I think mostly by the sort of flatness of the learning curve. Like it was one of those things where it's like I sort of expected it to be more like tennis, which I'm terrible at. But it's a very forgiving game, especially if you're not one of those lunatics who's really firing in all cylinders. Which give me a minute, I'll get there, but I'm not there yet. Sheridan and I went out and played for, 45 minutes or so on Saturday, and it was really great.
That's awesome. Well, yeah, when this all foolishness is over and you want to play, I would love to play because I love that game.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, we'll definitely make that happen.
Very cool. Yeah, this also, you recently celebrated the second anniversary. Man, where did that 2 years go of your taping of Jeopardy?
I know, right? It's so funny. Like I had kind of forgotten. Like I knew it was in this general sort of vicinity, but I wasn't really thinking about it. And then I got a 1-2 punch of Facebook memories, and our friend Randy Hunt sent me a message, sort of congratulating me on the anniversary. And I was just like, oh man, yeah, that was 2 years ago. That's it's true what they say. Time heals all wounds.
We're glad to hear that. As I say, you gave a great performance. You got hosed on a terrible final Jeopardy question, but it doesn't take anything from the fact that you dominated that game.
I thought, it's one of those things where it's like, you want to walk away with a bigger check, but at the end of the day, I feel proud of the way I acquitted myself.
Seriously, you got David Tyree.
That feels very accurate.
Well, let's talk movies here, Alan. You watched three over the weekend. Where would you like to begin?
We'll go in ascending order. We'll start at the bottom. Netflix has, as we've talked about this, particularly over the last few months, when the sort of Netflix original has become much more a staple of my review diet and film consumption. They are very much a company that is about churning out the content, and they're not necessarily super worried about the overall quality of what they put out. I think that's safe to say. And so I watched this movie called The Sleepover, and it's it's a kid friendly action movie, so you are already sort of hamstrung in a number of ways. Like there are only so many sort of ways you can tell this kind of story. One of the go-tos is, the parents have a secret and the kids are the only ones who can save them. Like we've seen that movie a lot.
Yep.
We've seen it again with The Sleepover. Now the deal with Netflix is like, there's a certain baseline level of competence that comes with Netflix. Like so the floor is decent, but you've also, the general thing with these movies is the ceiling is wildly variable, and what we've got here is a pretty low one. It's a reasonably executed collection of like dopey kid jokes and slightly strange adult banter, and then a couple of decent action sequences with a thin story. It's got a couple of actors that you recognize giving performances that you've already forgotten about. It's basically the exact kind of disposable cinema that we've come to expect from Netflix. Real quick plot. You got this teenage girl named Clancy, played by Sadie Stanley, living with her family on Cape Cod. She's a quiet girl, plays the cello. Her little brother is an oddball who has a tendency towards wild flights of imagination. Her dad, Ron, played by Ken Marino, is a pastry chef. And her mom, Margot, played by Malin Ackerman, is a homemaker. And then, you know, Clancy's crush invites her to a party. Her best friend wants her to go, but her parents aren't into it. So they make plans to sneak out. Meanwhile, Kevin and his neurotic buddy Lewis are going to have a sleepover in a tent in the backyard, and that's where Clancy and her friend are going to rendezvous when they sneak out. You know, pretty typical family stuff. But then mysterious figures turn up and things get crazy. These two people show up and they confront Margot with a demand, and they say, "Come do this job with us." And we're like, "What?" Turns out Margot has been in witness protection for 15 years after testifying against a notorious crime boss. She's an elite, like, jewel thief, and her old pals have come to kidnap her and force her to steal the crown that got away, much to Ron's chagrin, who didn't know any of this. And so they get kidnapped. The kids are left with just a couple of clues to try to figure out where their parents went. And so they have to track them down, rescue the folks, blah, blah, blah. Again, got to steal a crown, but the whole group needs to reunite, which means that Margot's ex-partner and ex-fiancé, Leo, played by Joe Manganiello, is brought into the picture, which makes Ron even more jealous. The thieves reunite to put their plan together to steal the crown, and the four kids are on an adventure of their own, following the clues and trying to find rescue the parents. And, Rich, you're not going to believe this, but hijinks ensue. if you're thinking right now, man, this movie sounds an awful lot like a store brand Spy Kids, you're pretty right. That's pretty much on the nose. If that movie had been made by someone inexperienced instead of Robert Rodriguez, you'd probably have something pretty close to The Sleepover. Again, it's fine. Like, kids will have fun, I guess. You know, at the very least, parents can feel comfortable letting their kids watch. It's like a saltine or like plain oatmeal. You know, it's bland, it's unexciting, but it's not like actively unpleasant. And so, I mean, the performances are of a piece with the rest of the film. It's not great, it's not terrible. The kids are okay. The little one's best friend, Lucas J, is probably the best actor of the bunch. He was the one who was so good in Driveways.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like he was the kid lead in that. He's excellent. You know, the ones you recognize are doing what they do. Man, it doesn't Ken Marino. Like, Ken Marino never met scenery he didn't want to chew. And he really cranks it up to 11 in this one. But, you know, I say that, but at least he's trying. Everyone else is just kind of present.
Yikes. All right, well, I'll be able to pass on The Sleepover then.
Yes, I think you can probably rest assured that you do not need to see that because again, like I said, Rich, I saw it like 3 days ago and it's gone. Like the only reason I have any of this is because I wrote it down.
All right, well, let's move on up the ladder to film number two.
This one I enjoyed actually quite a bit more. It's called The One and Only Ivan. It's new, streaming on Disney Plus. It was supposed to be a theatrical release, but again, you know, everything. And so it's streaming live. And look, Rich, I'm not someone who feels it necessary to foist my tastes on other people. Like, I tell you what I think, and I tell you how I feel, and you take that information and do with it what you will. So it's important for me to make sure that everybody knows. I really like talking animal movies. Like, and I acknowledge that these movies are often not good. I don't care. Like, I want, like, if you got animals relating their thoughts, whether it's like we're just hearing their thoughts or like their mouths are moving or whatever, like, I'm almost certainly going to watch it because, yeah. And granted, the field is usually crowded with dogs feeling feelings, which I particularly dig. But this one's a little different because this animal having feelings is the titular Ivan, a silverback gorilla.
Okay.
Ivan is a gorilla, voiced, by the way, by Sam Rockwell. And you're gonna lose your mind over this cast, Rich. It's unbelievable.
Well, I know our friend Bryan Cranston is in it.
Right. He's like the one sort of primary, like, actual person. Like, so he's not even doing voiceover. Like, he actually had to do some work to do this movie. So, you know, good on him. But yeah, so Ivan is a silverback gorilla. He's the star attraction at the Big Top Mall, which is a mall that has inexplicably a circus in it. And that show is run by Mac, the ringmaster. That would be the aforementioned Mr. Cranston, with the help of his assistant, George, played by Ramon Rodriguez, and George's daughter, Julia, played by Ariana Greenblatt. And it's been, you know, they've been doing the show for years. And Ivan's not alone. Like, he's the headliner, but he's not alone. There's a wise old elephant named Stella, voiced by Angelina Jolie, and a poodle named Snickers, voiced by Helen Mirren. There's a parrot named Thelma, voiced by Philippa Sue of Hamilton fame. And we've got a chicken that plays baseball, voiced by Chaka Khan.
Wow.
A rabbit that drives a fire truck named Murphy, played by Ron Funches. And there's also in the mix, he's not a performer, he's just a stray dog who's hanging out, Bob the dog, voiced by Danny DeVito. So, like I said, like, pretty impressive vocal cast. So Ivan's the headliner. His whole deal is, like, he is supposed to go out and roar and look ferocious and be scary and stuff. But really, he's thoughtful and sensitive. But all that takes a hit when a new attraction shows up. There's an adorable baby elephant named Ruby, voiced by Brooklyn Prince. Her popularity leaves Ivan sort of struggling with some existential issues.
Brooklyn Prince, by the way, another friend of downtown.
That's what I'm saying, man. So he's dealing with this stuff, and then he discovers some latent artistic talent when the young lady, Julia, gives him some crayons and paper, and he starts teaching himself to draw. And that stirs up some long-buried feelings. You know, and the show's regaining popularity, but Ivan finds himself wondering, like, is this all there is? Or do I want to be, like, out there in the world? Like, and is there a way for me to take my friends with me? Look, you know, as far as talking animal movies go, like, this is pretty good. This is a pretty good one. Like, the storytelling's pretty good. The characters are engaging. The CGI animals are well executed. That's always important for this sort of movie to really land. You know, it's like if the animals don't look right, like, it really sort of draws you out of it.
Right.
And the performances are pretty solid. Now, thematically, it's a little tricky because, like, the whole notion of performing animals is murky ethically. And then you factor in the fact that they're basically in cages in a mall. And that makes things complicated. And then you add in the fact that they're sapient, like they're self-aware and understand where they are and what they're doing. Like, that raises some concerns. The movie glosses over the darker aspects of that stuff, choosing instead to focus kind of on the bright side. And I think that's a good thing. I mean, it's a movie for kids. Like, you don't want it to get too bleak for these kids. You've got a self-aware gorilla, you know, dealing with, you know, the realities and consequences of personal freedom. So that's pretty heavy. But there are lots of moments where they lean into the sort of slapstick of it all. There are far more laughs than tears, but it is a Disney movie. So be aware, there will be tears. If you have feelings, you will tear up a little, get a little dusty, because there are always those moments in these movies. But yeah, like I said, the cast is stacked. Like, everybody is really good. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about it, and I struggled. And I can't really fully articulate why, but I can't imagine a better person to voice a sensitive gorilla with an artistic soul than Sam Rockwell.
I would agree with that.
You know what I mean? But I don't know why that is, but it just feels very true. And, you know, and everybody else, like, everybody is great. Like, And you know, they're all clearly having fun. Like that's always important with stuff like this. Cranston's excellent. Like he's so good at finding that sort of anchoring reality, no matter how ridiculous the surface is. Like and this is a really good sort of outlet for that talent. Like he's really it's weird to say that someone playing a ringmaster in a zoo full of talking animals is like acting, but that's what he's doing, and he's just so good. The movie tries to do a lot, probably too much, but it's sincere in what it's doing, which goes a long way. It might be a little too saccharine for older viewers, again, unless you are like me and are passionate about talking animal movies, but it's not for older viewers, it's for kids, and the reality is kids very well may fall in love with Ivan and his buddies.
Now, is this in theaters or is it available for streaming?
It's Disney Plus.
Okay, great. We will be checking that out then. All right, and finally, last on our list, but number one in your heart, Tesla.
Yeah. So when you hear a movie described as a biopic, you have a general idea of what that means. You know, like, you know, some do like the snapshots, some do full cradle to grave, but the beats that get hit along the way rarely change. Like, it's not a bad thing. Like, it's, you know, it's a real story of a real person, so that structural familiarity kind of makes sense. But then sometimes you get a biopic that's not at all what you're expecting. And that is Tesla. It's written and directed by Michael Amerita, who maybe is best known for 20 years ago making A Modern Hamlet that also starred Ethan Hawke. But this is a biopic in the sense that it is telling the story of the famed inventor Nikola Tesla, and again, played by Ethan Hawke. From his early days working for Thomas Edison through his time of up and down prominence in the sort of overlapping worlds of science and industry, we get the high points and the low points as he seeks to make his mark on the world. You know, the pretty typical biopic stuff. Stylistically, though, it's something so completely different. Like, there's a motif where, like, the interstitials are, like, it's like they're standing, like, they're almost like stages, like stage pictures with, like, projected backgrounds. So there are moments of that, and there are these weird, like, striking anachronistic bits, and there's this meta sense of, like, just really sharp self-awareness and all these strange aesthetic choices. Like, it doesn't look or feel like any biopic I've ever seen. And, you know, and it's got a narrative structure that is willing to sort of fracture itself as well. And the end result is a film that is really weird and unexpected, but extremely watchable. We start in 1884. Tesla is in New Jersey working for Thomas Edison, who's played by Kyle MacLachlan. He has ideas that could revolutionize the way electricity is generated and harnessed. But Edison has his own ideas, and so Tesla leaves, setting out on his own. And it's during this time that he first crosses paths with Anne Morgan, the youngest daughter of J.P. Morgan. And Anne Morgan's played by Eve Hewson, who I discovered in the course of writing this review is Bono's daughter.
Wow. I had no idea.
I didn't know she was an actress.
No.
But, she's actually quite good. And so there's this weird connection between Tesla and Anne. It grows pretty fast. And they fall into this, it's not really a romance, but, like, you can kind of tell that maybe they both wouldn't mind if it was a romance, but he's, you know, he's so, like, wound up in his own life of the mind, and she has trust issues stemming from the fact that her dad's the richest man in the world, so you never know what people's motivations are and all this stuff. And as an aside, as one of the aforementioned intriguing sort of devices, Anne Hewson is actually she's not a narrator, but she is sort of telling the story. Like, I refer to her as sort of a master of ceremonies, like kind of steering the narrative without actually being a narrator. It's difficult to explain. It's really something that you need to see. But anyway, Tesla's partnerships and his allegiances shift and evolve. He gets a big break when he associates with the industrialist George Westinghouse, played strangely, but actually quite well, by Jim Gaffigan.
Wow.
I wasn't, yeah, like just an odd choice, but a very effective one. and so he's enlisted in the whole current war thing between Westinghouse and Edison, the whole alternating current versus direct current and all that stuff. Tesla's ambitions outstrip his accomplishments. He decides to head to Colorado to continue his experiments. J.P. Morgan is the financier of this work at first, but things seem to stall out, and so the money train sort of runs out, and the cord is cut, and J.P. Morgan walks away, Ann Morgan walks away, and Tesla is sort of left alone to face his fate. It's an interesting choice. It's an interesting marriage of style and subject, because Tesla was such a weird and sort of eccentric and largely unknowable man. Like, there's not a lot of information, like, actually about him. Like, we know a little bit about, like, the work that he did and whatnot, but as far as the person, like, there's very little of that out there. And so you get this kind of, Amadeira really sort of shines when he's dealing with this kind of, like, square peg character. Like, and then you add in the scattershot aesthetic where you have moments where it feels like a hybridized play with, like, lone players standing in front of those projected backdrops. And then there are these dropped in moments of anachronism, like Thomas Edison, like, pulls out an iPhone, you know, and then, which seems, and I love the deliberateness of those anachronisms, because it's clearly intended to accentuate the notion that Tesla was this sort of man out of time, like a predictor of technological futures. So there's this fluidity to everything. So even the clarity of the picture seems to move sort of back and forth between sort of a gentle blurriness and a distinct sharpness. And again, it's noteworthy that a number of these people have worked with Almereyda before, because it had to have helped the sort of unconventional filmmaking to have people who were familiar with that kind of process, whether it's Hawke, who was in Hamlet, McLaughlin, who I believe was Polonius in that same version of Hamlet. So they're all familiar with each other and whatnot. Finding the proper performance lane for a movie like this seems like it would be particularly tricky. Like, when you're dealing with something so stylized, like, there's a real tonal and presentational challenge to it. But Ethan Hawke, who I've really come around on, like, I had a stretch where I thought he was, I occasionally would refer to him as a sucking chest wound in any movie that he was in. Like, I was not kind to Mr. Hawke's work. But he's really, like, especially in the last 6 or 7 years, has really sort of brought me around. He's great in this. Like, his Tesla is this man consumed by the life of the mind. Like, he's drifting through the real world because all of his attention is, like, taken by all this constant deluge of ideas in his head. And so there's that little sense of distraction every time he's on screen. Like, even when he's engaged with another character, you can tell that part of him is, like, removed from that. And being able to indicate that sort of remove, I think is telling, and without that, I don't think it necessarily works. So, I mean, it's like, kudos to him. And again, the rest of the cast is great. Houston is wonderful as Ann Morgan. I love me some Kyle MacLachlan, and who's having a blast as Thomas Edison. Jim Gaffigan, like, it's so funny. It seems like he's carving out, like, a little bit of a niche for himself, playing these sort of second and third tier historical figures in these movies. Like he was really good in Chappaquiddick, and he's good here. And again, like I said, certainly not your run of the mill biopic. Complicated man, stands to reason, complicated movie. Ultimately, a compelling and eccentric portrait of a compelling and eccentric man. I think it's an ideal match of filmmaker and subject.
That sounds pretty good. Well, we got to check that out. Definitely. Thank you, Alan, as always.
Hey. My pleasure.
Enjoy the next couple of days. Are we chatting with you on Wednesday?
I would love to chat with you on Wednesday.
Fabulous. It's a date. I'll circle it in red on my calendar.
Beautiful.
We'll see you then. Thanks, Al.
Thanks, man.
Alan Adams, The Main Edge, past the popcorn on Downtown